the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Farming Your Career Podcast with host Dr. Aaron L. Albert, where we explore a variety of healthcare and pharmacy-related topics, including career development, healthcare IT, informatics, innovation, entrepreneurship, STEM, women's issues, and more. Farming Your Career Podcast is part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Now, here's your host, Dr. Aaron L. Albert.
Welcome to Farming Your Career. I'm Aaron Albert. Today, we're going to continue with our How I Rx Roll wildly popular mini-series here on Farming Your Career. Not so much about what work you're doing as a non-traditional pharmacist, but how you're doing it. And today's guest is an old friend to our career podcast, none other than Dr. Alan Spies. Dr. Spies is a native of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. He earned his BS in pharmacy from Southwestern Oklahoma State University, a JD and an MBA from the University of Oklahoma, and a PhD in pharmacy administration from the University of Mississippi. He is currently serving as the chair of the Kennedy Pharmacy Innovation Center at the University of South Carolina College of Pharmacy. Prior to that, Alan served as an associate professor and co-director of the Leadership Degree Option Program at the University of Oklahoma College of Pharmacy. He received their Teacher of the Year Award in 2011. And he and I share the honor of formerly teaching pharmacy law in schools of pharmacy. So I have a special place in my heart for Dr. Spies. So let's give a listen to his episode on now how he Rx rolls in his newer leadership role at the Kennedy Pharmacy Innovation Center. We're here today with Alan Spies. Professor Spies, how are you? And welcome to the Pharmacy Podcast.
I am doing well, Aaron. How are you doing?
I'm good. So today we are continuing our series on how I Rx roll. Again, not so much about what you do, but how you do it. So let's unpack that with you. Let's start with the same question that I ask all of our guests, and you've been on the show before. So for the people that haven't heard your first podcast with us, tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are today and then what you do today.
Yeah, so my path has been a very non-traditional pharmacist path, even though I work at a college of pharmacy. So I started out in independent community pharmacy some nearly 25 years ago. There's no way, Aaron, we can be that age, and I don't mean to lump you in with me, but there's no way that 25 years have come and gone. But I really cut my teeth in pharmacy at a corner drugstore in a town of 700 with one flashing light that was literally Main Street. And it had special affection for me because that's where my father and my grandparents grew up. So I'd have patients that would come in and say they knew my grandparents. And so loved community pharmacy, but once again, the non-traditional route was calling me. So went from most respected profession to least respected profession and ventured into law school with the goal of going into politics because I love the political advocacy side, had been active in student government, and decided I needed some business as well, so did a dual JD MBA. And if that was not enough school, decided to continue on going toward initially a career in academia to get my PhD in pharmacy administration at the University of Mississippi. But though I spent some time in academia, really, then the non-traditional path came again, and I left academia in, that would have been 2014, to then begin a career of a small business owner. So started working for a nonprofit as a COO, doing leader development, and really working with leaders around Oklahoma City, which is where I was born and raised. But then started my own leader development company. And that's a lot of the entrepreneurial bug I have of how do we solve problems? How do we meet today's challenges? And in doing leader development primarily with colleges and universities and mainly in pharmacy, really helping equip our students, our faculty, our practitioners with tools to grow in self-awareness and emotional intelligence that ability to communicate, to manage emotions, to know what does it look like to be on the other side of me, and what is some of that broccoli that's in my teeth every day that may limit my ability to impact my patients or my community or my profession. That led me to where I'm currently at the University of South Carolina College of Pharmacy. And so the question is, how can a guy who has this traditional academic path and is going down this road, then ventures into the non-traditional, and then comes back and forth, how does he end up back at a college of pharmacy? And the answer is, every day I get to work in the Kennedy Pharmacy Innovation Center, which is a center founded by one of the University of South Carolina College of Pharmacy alums, who is an entrepreneur and innovator and is now owns a pharmaceutical manufacturing company here in West Columbia, who recognized that the profession of pharmacy to continue to thrive needs to be innovative and entrepreneurial, and that's regardless of practice setting. And so that opportunity opened up about a year and a half ago. And so now as a Kennedy chair here in the Kennedy Pharmacy Innovation Center, I get to work with our students, with faculty, with staff, continuing to work with pharmacy faculty and students from around the country, and how can we become more innovative and entrepreneurial in the profession of pharmacy so that we can solve the problems of pharmacy and healthcare in a rapidly changing healthcare environment.
So great background. You and I have very kind of similar career paths, so I appreciate the non-traditional academician as kind of the short version of that. So I'm excited to talk to you today. But we're going to talk about how you're working now. So let's get into some of the nuts and bolts around that. What mobile device are you using now, and what type of computer are you using?
So I am a Mac guy through and through, and Apple, have the iPhone. I am definitely drinking that Kool-Aid of using that. And it's interesting you asked that question, Aaron, and this will lead in probably some further discussion, is when I moved into my office a year and a half ago, I opted for a MacBook Pro. I do not have a desktop. I have a laptop that goes with me everywhere so I can be mobile and work in a variety of different environments and places.
So in kind of taking that to another step, what apps, gadgets, and platforms can't you live without at this point?
You know, it's interesting. I use very little of the gadgets, the apps. I'm still, though I use the technology, I'm still pretty old school in a way, in a lot of the ways that I do things. I mean, I definitely enjoy having my music apps going in the background, but I have really tried to simplify and definitely use the technology, but not so reliant upon it, because what I found is I was becoming so dependent and so consumed and connected with the technology, it was actually inhibiting my innovation.
Interesting. So when you go to a meeting, for example, how do you take notes?
Pen and paper.
Old school. I like it. Do you carry around a notebook that you use for ever, or do you take just like a legal pad, or what techniques are you using to capture meeting notes?
Yeah, I tend to take like a legal pad. I guess that's ingrained into us as attorneys. But I will transfer notes, you know, to something electronic so that I have that and have it stored. But I try to go as light as possible. And there's something still about me in physically writing with a very fine-tuned black pen, and something that I still appreciate of carrying a hardbound or softback book on an airplane and actually physically turning the pages.
Interesting. So you read old school books. You're not a Kindle guy?
I'm not.
Okay. I can appreciate that. What one word would describe your work style? Or do you have a hashtag that you think would be relevant to your work style?
Simplicity.
Okay. Interesting. So let's talk about a recent work day. Let's talk about, you know, your morning routines and rituals, habits, all the way through the workday, and then what you do in the evenings.
Yeah. So, you know, in a typical day, I guess if I would use one term, one word to describe that. It's intentional. And so from the moment I get up, and I usually get up around 5 a.m., I'm very intentional with that first hour, hour and a half of being very still. And by that, I mean this is a real recharge as a strong preference introvert. So it could be reading. It could be often going for a walk. It could be prayer, meditation. It's very much slowing me down, because when I wake up in the morning at 5 a.m., my mind is already going a million miles an hour. It's like the hamster in the wheel. All the daily tasks, all the things to do, all of the ideas or the projects I'm working on. So I have to intentionally slow that down, because I'm going to be in that mode a lot throughout the day. So by slowing down and setting my day at that slower pace, and I like to use the terms change of place and change of pace. I did not come up with that. An author, Mark Batterson, coined that term, or at least that's the first time I read it years ago. But it's very intentional, because if I hop out of bed at 5 a.m. and immediately jump into all my daily tasks, I certainly can do that. That is not a good place for me to go throughout the day, because it inhibits my creativity. It inhibits my ability to be present with the people around me, which ultimately that will impact my productivity.
Okay. So after morning, what does your day look like in the world of academia?
So generally get to the office probably 8:30, depending on meetings. I try not to stack meetings one after the next like I did this morning, because what that can do is it can cause me to try to rush. Okay, I've got a 9 a.m., a 10 a.m., 11 a.m. I certainly can do that. It really causes me to take those wheels to go even faster. So generally, I will have 30 minutes or so when I get to the office with nothing scheduled. So that could be, okay, is there an email that's urgent and important? Okay, I deal with that. There's something that I need to deal with. And kind of getting organized. I definitely look at my schedule before I get to the office to begin planning what the day may look like, holding plans loosely, of course, because we know things can change at any moment. So I typically may have a class I teach in the morning. It could be something around leadership or entrepreneurship. I may have a meeting or two with a colleague. I've really tried in this intentional space to connect more with faculty, to get to know things that they are working on. Are there opportunities for collaboration where there's some similar interest? And then I always eat. You don't get in between me and food. So I devote an hour. That can might be 12 to 1. And so sometimes it's going out to eat lunch, perhaps with a colleague. Sometimes it's me in my office eating lunch, you know, closing the door, listening to some sort of music. Once again, that is intentionally slowing me down. And I try to do this throughout the day, because once lunch is over, here we go. We're gonna really gear and ramp back up. Then the afternoon, it's oftentimes meetings or working on some things, trying to wrap up the day. I will say, in an ideal schedule, I try to reserve my time for creativity in blocks. And this will be the picture I send you, Aaron. When I moved into my office, I had two requests. I said, one, I want a standing desk. So my desk has the ability electronically to raise up so I can stand or sit, because this generation's standing is this generation smoking. So with health in mind, because it matters, our health matters. The other request is, what is the biggest whiteboard you can give me? And I was able to get a 4x8 whiteboard. And that is my most prized possession in my office. And so that's where I spend a lot of time, either myself, working with students, working with colleagues. We start whiteboarding. And that for me is the real creativity juices that start to flow.
Awesome. And then after work, what does that look like?
I really intentionally try to disconnect. And I have, when I leave my office, I have probably a 5 to 7 minute walk across campus, which goes past our library. We have an open space where there's a big fountain at the center of campus to the parking garage. I begin to really downshift from this work task mode into more of a lower gear. In the work I do, we call it a second gear. I'm preparing to get into second gear, which is connect, really connecting, being fully mentally, physically, emotionally present with the people around me. Because once I get in my car, I have another 5 to 7 minute drive home. So that when I come in the front door and our golden doodle greets me, then my wife greets me, I'm fully already connecting with her rather than, just kind of being there physically, but mentally I'm still going over the presentation I need to correct or the manuscript I need to resubmit. I really want to be intentionally present when I hit the door, but I have to begin downshifting. So I've got that 15 to 20 minute window where I can walk slowly, I can drive, I can listen to music. So when I come in the driveway, come in the front door, I'm fully connecting with the people that mean the most to me.
So let's talk about your office setup. You mentioned your whiteboard and your standing desk. What and do you have like a home office setup where you do your writing? It sounds like you're, still publishing and doing the scholarly work on an academic track. So can you kind of describe your work environment specifically?
Yeah. And the answer is I do have an office at home. The advantage, there's advantages and disadvantages to both. The advantages at home are I have windows, so I get to see natural light, which is always helpful for me. I really like to be able to connect with the outdoors, realizing it can be a distraction too, as I chase every squirrel I see with the shiny objects. But I do have a home office. One of the big resources I utilize at home more often than probably in the office is I have my noise-canceling headphones. Okay. So for me, I can get distracted really easily. And if I'm in that creativity, that zone of writing in particular, I can get distracted easily. That really helps. But yes, Aaron, to your point, the laptop goes with me, home, office, work office, being able to write in both. And sometimes if I'm stuck, it's that change of place. Get up, go. It may even be a coffee shop. I go. We've got some great ones in town. Headphones go with me. I may be in a coffee shop and being able to focus. So I love the ability to disrupt where I'm physically at. And sometimes that really does help me, especially if I get stuck. Exercise, that is a significant part of everything I do because that helps me slow down. There's the creativity. We know the health benefits of exercise. That really does matter, and it makes a big difference for me. But not being stuck in one place, I have found to be really helpful.
What's your best life or work hack or shortcut? Or you could share an eccentric work process that you use regularly.
I would say the best one is when I can put on t-shirt and shorts, or if it's in more of a winter time, like my hiking pants and some sort of a sweatshirt, and go for a walk in nature. Could be a hike, could be somewhere away from traffic, away from people, hustle and bustle. And really with no time, no clock. I know I've got 30 minutes, I need to hurry. So it could be a time where I don't have anything scheduled. And I'm in no particular hurry, rush, and I can really be present with the surroundings. I have found that some of my greatest creativity and ideas will happen in those moments because I'm not rushed, I'm not under a schedule. So, if you talk about what's the best like work hack, it's can you find some time where you will not be interrupted. My phone does not go with me because if it's with me and it buzzes, I can't, forgive my poor grammar, I can't not look at it. That will send me back into the, I'm intentionally disconnecting. Now, people know where I'm at, but I'm intentionally disconnecting. And to be able to do that for an hour or two, to really lose track of time, to really take in the surroundings, I have found that to be one of my greatest abilities to not only recharge, but to get that creativity and that innovation flowing.
So how do you keep track of everything that you need to do? What software do you use to calendar with, and do you have any tricks or hacks there?
You know, nothing really too sophisticated. I mean, I'm a list guy, so I like to make lists, whether it's on my phone, because, you know, there, we all get that, well, I say all, most of us get the satisfaction from clicking and seeing that item disappear. And sometimes on a slow day, I might just add it on there if I've already done it, just for that satisfaction. But it's really basic. I mean, I've got Post-it notes, and I might come in for the day and say, here are the three things I need to do today, and write it out on a Post-it note and just cross them off with my pen. You know, it's really not a sophisticated system, but there is an intentionality to it, a focus of, okay, these are the three things I've got to do today. You know, this is the most important. And I have a plan. I mean, I have a calendar. I have events on there. I'm looking ahead. What does tomorrow look like to begin planning today or next week? And so it's not just a free flow chaos, whatever happens. I'm a pretty structured guy. But what I try not to do is to get so gripped with every moment being planned, because that will begin to suffocate me to some degree. So building in that flexible time, if someone comes by, a student wants to talk, or, boy, it's a great day, it'd be great to get out and walk around campus for 30 minutes. Having that flexibility and that freedom in that schedule really helps give me life. But yet, if you looked at my calendar, it's very structured. I've got events, times, plans, all of that. So it's holding the schedule and being disciplined there, but also having that flexibility built in. I found that to be a good combination that, at probably just hearing it, could sound like it's really contradictory.
So let's talk about burnout and then how you restore or refresh yourself in terms of your creativity and getting back to work. So can you, and you talked about that a little bit, so let's focus on the burnout part. How do you know when you're burned out, and what do you do to remedy that?
Yeah, and it's a great question, and I think it's an important question for all of us. For me, it's beginning to see some of the warning signs of, okay, I'm not as empathetic to the people around me. I'm not as interested in the people around me. I'm naturally a curious person. I like to ask questions. I'm very relational. But when I start to not do that, I'm just about the transaction and you know, kind of get out of my way. I don't notice you. I'm just in task mode. Where that becomes more and more prevalent, that's a warning sign. Ooh, okay. My tank's getting kind of low. When I stop noticing things around me, you know, I can do this walk and I'm not noticing anybody. I'm not noticing the weather. I'm not, you know, paying attention to anything. That's a warning sign for me, and especially with the people closest to me. Am I really connecting with them, meaning asking them how they're doing and really wanting to hear the answer, even if that answer takes 30, 45 minutes? And yeah, I'm fine with that. When I stop doing those things, those are early warning signs that the light is starting to flash, like we have a problem. Now, if I am not aware or don't seem to be paying attention to it, then when it gets to the real short answers, I'm really short with people. Someone cuts across in front of me in traffic, and normally I'd be like, really? Well, now it's like the Hulk comes out. Mm. Explosion. For the littlest thing, I stub my toe, you know, normally I'd be like, oh, that hurts, versus explosion. Okay, now we're getting into the real danger zone here, because now I'm going Hulk on the people around me and those around me. That's not a fun place anyone wants to be. And then if that is even not, and this is very, very seldom, that's not the warning sign, then it's eventually just the complete shutdown, like done, crash, can't function, can't talk to anyone, you know, basically I'm done, period. The littlest task, too much, I can't do it. That's the complete crash, nothing left. I mean, equate it to your phone And not that your phone's on 5%. It's that your phone is so dead it takes 5 minutes for even the light for the battery that says there's no charge to come on. That's when I know, like, uh-oh, that's we've completely crashed.
Okay, so what do you do to plug it back in and get it restored?
Well, hopefully I'm noticing this earlier. So it is, for me, it's a daily practice. Just like with my phone, I have to charge this thing every day now. And so for me, it's daily. So it's that getting up at five, you know, connecting as far as slowing down, you know, that internal recharge, going for a walk, you know, reading, being still, prayer, meditation, you know, listening to music. It's that daily rhythm and practice, not a rule, like I've got to do this, I got to get the checkbox, but a daily practice, because that helps keep that battery up on a regular basis, because the battery is going to go down throughout the day, every day, even doing the things I love to do. That's natural. But where I get into trouble is if I get away from that daily rhythm and routine for days, weeks at a time, then it becomes much more difficult to recharge. And so if I'm in that crash mode and then I'm off the grid for 2 or 3 days, that's really not a good place to be, especially for the people around me, to just check out for 2 or 3 days straight. And that's what happens when the crash occurs. So to me, it's that daily attention, that daily care. And even throughout my day, you know, taking that 15 minutes at lunch and listening to music, or if it's a nice day, I go for a walk or sit out on the park bench, one of the benches we've got on campus, just watching students walk by. I mean, that might be a 15-minute recharge. It's wonders what that will do, that fresh air, that change of pace, that change of place throughout my day that doesn't require 2, 3, 4 hours. It's amazing what that will do throughout my day. But that requires an intentionality, because my default will be just stay at your desk, keep working. You've got plenty to do, and just in that mindset. And that's where the battery can really go low.
So one of the things I loved most about academia was it was constantly a series of small passion projects that I really enjoyed doing, almost like little startups in a way. So can you share maybe one passion project or startup-like project that you're working on in your current day role?
Yeah, and it really gets to my passion of leader development. And it's a couple things. One, it's how can we equip, whether students, faculty, staff, with simple tools that I can teach in 5 minutes or less that they can immediately apply? That gets to the, I don't need this now. That's something I may use in 2 years, which will never get used. So that's been part of the work over the last 3 years for me, equipping people with tools that they can use in their everyday life. It isn't just simply for at the work or the school.
Okay.
The other one, which is a newer initiative, is given the changes in healthcare, the changes in pharmacy, the changes in the pharmacist job market, how can we at the Kennedy Center begin to not only develop, highlight, foster more innovative and unique career opportunities for our pharmacist, and not to the detriment or not to downplay or discourage the traditional career paths, no, but show students there are more than these three traditional career paths. And for some, that's going to be really inspirational. Wow, I didn't know I could work for a national association. I didn't know that I could work in the drug industry in this unique area in regulatory, or I didn't know I could be a consultant, whatever it may be. How do we highlight unique career opportunities, but not just from a theoretical academic sense, but I will connect the student with someone who's actually doing it. So it's not hypothetical. It's the bridge between academia, potentially the ivory tower, which I love, by the way, to the real world, the practice where the rubber meets the road. And for us at the Kennedy Center to serve as that bridge that connects both, because I love both and we need both. we connect our students to it so they see it, it's real world, and then we help them along a path that hopefully can get them to where they want to go.
What books and podcasts are you listening to right now or reading right now?
Good question. Let me think. As strange as it may seem, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. And it's not because I don't love the information. It's just I so enjoy the quiet and the silence. But there is one that my wife got me connected with, and it's, I believe it's Revisionist History. Have you heard of that one, Aaron?
Yeah, it's Malcolm Gladwell's.
Yeah. And I love just listening to him and the way he sees things in different ways, in unique and innovative ways. And it really challenges me to think, ooh, okay, I thought of it this way. I found that one to be particularly very intriguing and interesting to listen to. I'm trying to think. My problem is I have so many books at once that I'm reading. I'm trying to think of a book recently that I read that especially stands out. And I can't think of one right now off the top of my head. That's how bad. That is an area where I struggle. I start a lot of books and I don't finish them. And so right now I've got several that at home that I've started or are on the shelf for next. But one that comes out as I'm looking at my my bookshelf, I haven't completed it, but I think it's good. It's called Made to Stick.
Okay.
And the whole premise behind it is why some ideas survive and others die. So it really gets to this concept, and I think we've been talking about it, but I'm just reading the back cover just because it did speak out, and I'll just read the first one. The six key qualities, simplicity. So that is really, as I mentioned earlier, a real driver for me, and because I believe simple is powerful. And in the academic world, the tendency can be on more is better, and I love information and I love knowledge. But my concern is that over time, and Aaron, you and I were talking about this before, when we go for more is always better, that can lend itself to complexity. Complexity is harder to replicate. It's harder to apply. And I think it's tougher to stick. Hence this book, which I got some of what I've been saying from this, Made to Stick. The ideas that are simple that tend to stick tend to be the most lasting and I think tend to be the most powerful.
And last question, Alan, who living would you also like to hear answer these questions?
A living person that I would love to hear answer these questions. I would have to say George W. Bush.
Okay.
I'm curious because I know that since he's, you know, after becoming, you know, after his terms of president, how, you know, he paints and writes and does different things like that. And I just would be so curious, given it seems that he has this creative side, that, and we all have it, this interesting other side that was different than, you know, job as president. I would be so curious his answers to these questions.
So with that, Alan, where can people connect with you in a way that you like to be connected with, online or off?
Well, what is easiest is initially connecting with me online, but what I love the most are really video calls, one-on-one, because one, I get to see people face-to-face as much as we can virtually, but I connect more with people that way. I get to see facial expressions. I get to see them as I say something and kind of how they respond. It's more of a connecting point. And I love that. If I can't meet face to face, which is ideal, that's the preferred method. But given, you know, even the craziness of the world, and I use technology, even though it sounds like maybe I don't as much, that initial connection via email to set up a day and time to meet is the best way initially, and then I can be very intentional in being present whenever we connect, whether it's Skype or Zoom.
Well, with that, Alan Spies, thank you for being part of How I Rx Roll, and good luck as you continue on the entrepreneurship, the personal standard ACPE number 4 that you and I share a passion around, the self-awareness and leadership and entrepreneurship. And thanks again for being part of the podcast.
You're welcome, Aaron. I always enjoy our time together and so appreciate you inviting me to be a part.
Thanks for listening to another episode of How I Rx Roll on Farming Your Career. I'm Aaron Albert. Pharmacists, are you planning ahead for 2019 and your travel and meetings budget's been cut? Also, are you thinking ahead for a certification to set yourself apart from the crowd, but you don't know where to start? If so, head on over to my website, aaronalbert.com, and click on Digital Downloads. I've got 2 amazing products for you to get started. First and foremost, I've updated the 2019 certifications in healthcare and pharmacy list. This list is now over 225 different certifications that individuals can earn in healthcare and pharmacy. Everything from healthcare IT to different therapeutic areas, board certifications, of course, and certificate programs. Also at the Digital Downloads page, you can check out the 2019 Pharmacy Meetings and Organizations list. This helped me immensely in planning ahead to which meetings and conventions I had both time and money to attend. So start with these, or consider starting with these 2 lists, and help plan ahead for a maximized 2019. Take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Farming Your Career podcast, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. If you have ideas or comments for Erin, be sure to contact her through Twitter. Follow her at Erin L. Albert. And remember to keep your career growing.